At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Really pleased today to have an old friend with us today as we talk about a subject that is really intriguing. I'll tell you what, we're going to start off September in a little bit of a different vein. I told you it was going to get a little creepy, a little dark this month, and it is. We're going to start off today talking about UFOs and aliens and the fact that they may not be what you think they are. I'll tell you what. I had an interesting talk out at an interesting panel with some great panelists out at Michigan Paracon. It was about the interconnectivity of ghosts, UFOs, and cryptids. And just to give you a little background before we bring our guest in today, Ursula Bielski, who's a good old friend of ours here on the show. She's not old, by the way. I just an old good friend of ours. I should have reversed the order on that. My apologies to Ursula. We were at Michigan Paracon, and I had Shane Pittman, Heather Taddy, and Mike Ricksecker on stage. And I was asking questions about aliens. And I had an agenda. I'll admit that, a little bit of an agenda. I wanted to throw them an idea that Nathaniel Gillis had put in my head. The idea that there's a duality to aliens. And that's that duality that maybe they're not what they seem they are. In other words, that aliens may secretly be demonic. Now, I know there may be some eye rolling in the audience right now. Oh, everything's a demon, Tim. We're going to go down that road today with Ursula Bielski. But we're going to do it from a Catholic perspective because Ursula is unashamedly, unabashedly Catholic. So that's what this book is for the most part about. And it's a wonderful book. So we're going to talk about the brand new book out there. And it is a wonderful book and it's very detailed. And it's got a lot of scientific background to it. It's called The Devil in Dreamland, Catholic Faith, UFOs, Occultism, and the End of the Supernatural. Now, on stage with Shane and Taddy and Mike, I gave three passes. The first one was asking about why the name Jesus Christ rebukes UFOs and aliens. And I got kind of a mixed reaction and answer there, and I'm hoping they release the tape so you guys can watch this. The second question had to do with, and I'm trying to remember exactly how this goes off. The second question had a lot to do with, and I'm trying to remember because I told Ursula before the show, it had to do with another subject. The third question had to do with alien-human hybrids. And I said, I have a theory about this, and I'm going to spring it on you after I ask this question, and that's this. Why do you suppose that decade after decade, you see these aliens mixing their seed with human women? Why continue decade after decade to continue to mate with humans? What's the end game? What's the advantage? Why continue to do this? And I wanted their thoughts. And I got everything from producing a better alien to, you know, different theories. They finally asked me, what is your thought, Tim? And I threw out a theory that got a small audible gasp out of the audience and some shock. And the only one I really got a little bit of pushback from was from Mike Ricksecker, who didn't believe what I said. And it was this: that aliens have no soul. In other words, I was bringing up the fact that aliens are demonic. And the way I put it was this. I said, aliens don't have a soul. In fact, they're looking for the one thing that humans don't have. Or I'm sorry, that humans do have. That is something divine given to them by God. And they're trying to get that back by mating with humans. In other words, they're trying to harvest a creature, half human, half alien, that they can eventually harvest that soul from, something that's part of them, that they can take that soul back from. The minute I said that, Mike jumped up and said, no, I don't think that they, of course not. They have to be one of God's creatures too, and of course they have a soul. Well, then he went on what his theory was as to what aliens were. Got me thinking about something that Ursula has in this brand new book, which again is a brilliant book. The book is The Devil in Dreamland, Catholic Faith, UFOs, Occultism, and the End of the Supernatural, where she talks about what the establishment thinks aliens are, as opposed to what we want to say they are. And we'll get into that in today's program. We're going to start off hot here. Let me tell you about Ursula Bielski. She's a historian, author, and parapsychologist. Ursula has been investigating the paranormal for more than 3 decades. She's also the author of 12 popular and critically acclaimed books on history and the supernatural, including the groundbreaking Chicago Haunts series and Graveyards of Chicago, as well as several books for the History Press and a number of academic articles on parapsychological subjects. Ursula has been featured on scores of television shows, including the Travel Channel's Ghost Adventures and The Maury Show. By the way, it was not a baby daddy episode. And radio shows such as Coast to Coast AM and this one right here. She also edited children's books on the paranormal for Bearport Publishing in New York and teaches courses in paranormal studies for Chicago's Harper College and College of Lake County. She and her husband, historian, journalist, and author David Cowan, operate the Chicago Hauntings Tours for 2 decades since handing the reins over to American Ghost Walks in 2020. Ursula has started a legend-inspired perfume business and small press, Magic Lantern Publishing, which publishes journals, planners, coloring books, and workbooks, as well as publishing classic novels with fresh art introductions and annotations. A lifetime Chicagoan, Ursula attended St. Benedict Elementary and high schools and received her bachelor's degree in history from Benedictine University and a master's in American cultural and intellectual history from Northeastern Illinois University. So let's welcome in for yet another time, Ursula Bielski. Hi, Ursula. How are you?
I am great. It is so good to be here and see your face again. It's been way too long.
Yes, it has. And I'm so glad to have you back on the program. So I have to ask you right off the bat, why this book and why include aliens this time around?
It was part of a whole thing that happened that came out of my long history in paranormal research. And, you know, like everyone else, you know, up until, gosh, I've been doing this stuff for so long, like 40 years, I guess. Mm-hmm. And up until, you know, the early 2000s, you know, I had done, you know, hundreds of paranormal investigations. But at that time, there was no involvement in spirit communication. So that was never a part of, it wouldn't have occurred to us to try and record spirit voices or anything like that. It wasn't something that was done.
Yep.
And then after, you know, the explosion in the ghost hunting culture in the early 2000s, you know, like everybody else, I got very into, you know, EVP, ITC, and I thought it was safe. I thought I knew what I was doing. You know, I'm saying my prayers, protecting myself. And that turned out not to be the case at all. And I got into a very dark place. And there was a lot of other stuff that happened, family things and relationship things. And I found myself in 2018 when my mom passed away, I just went to a very, very dark place. It was kind of the end of all of this piling up. And I had something happen where I was really, you know, I really believe I was at the brink of possession. And I talk about this a little bit in the book, where I had gone through, you know, the infestation in our apartment, where we were hearing things and seeing things, and then the vexation where I was getting bruises and scratches and bite marks on my body. I was starting to audibly hear voices, you know, not on recordings, but just audibly hear them.
Yeah.
And so I had gone through all of these stages, you know, leading up to possession. And I really believe I was almost there. I was starting to have these periods of time where I wouldn't remember things that I had done or I had said that, you know, my husband and my children would tell me, don't you remember doing this? And I recognized, as someone that has been involved in demonological cases for so long, that these, you know, all of these things were red flags, like there was something that was happening. And I've completely panicked and pulled away from the paranormal. And I thought it was right, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, and I pulled away from paranormal. So I cut off, you know, all of these connections with everybody that I had known for so long and everything that I've been doing. And then in my email one day, I got an invitation from a local MUFON group, I think it was in Missouri, that was having an online seminar on UFOs. And I thought, oh, that sounds harmless. You know, it's just, it's UFOs. It's like spacemen and things. And, but it's, you know, unexplained. That sounds great. That's not dangerous. I'll sign up. So I signed up for it. I was really excited to like meeting some people and doing something, because we were all isolated, you know. And there I was at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning with my coffee in front of the computer. And after the first two presentations, I realized that the UFO experience is more occult than anything that I had experienced as a ghost hunter in the last four decades. And, you know, not only were the methods of contacting these beings so occult, but the history of it was as well. And I saw in so much of what was going on with experiencers of UFOs and so-called aliens, that there was so much, again, of what I recognized from my years as being involved in demonological cases. And that was the start of it. And, you know, a couple weeks later, I was well down the rabbit hole that anybody that gets interested in UFOs goes down. And it just got weirder and weirder, as you know. And that I became so concerned about what I was finding. And for those who haven't really looked at the spiritual aspect of UFOs, the evangelical community of Christians around the world, they are completely down with the idea that aliens are demons. And probably everybody's heard this theory, and that comes from mostly from the evangelical community. Mm-hmm. And it's all connected with the Nephilim, the fallen angels, and all of that. So there are pastors and preachers all over the world and scholars from most other denominations of Christianity that are sending out the alarm against what they call the demonic deception of the whole UFO phenomenon. So I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll look at the Catholic Church, you know, my own church,
right,
to see, you know, what our, you know, superior scholarship over these, you know, millennia have, you know, come up with about aliens and UFOs. And to my shock and horror, I discovered quite the opposite, that the Catholic Church is the only Christian church that seems to be totally fine with UFOs and extraterrestrials. And strangely, it doesn't even the high ups, the most popular theologians and scholars, and even scholars in the Vatican, kind of don't even really seem to have thought about it very much.
Let me stop you real quick, Ursula. Wasn't it the Pope who said if they came down that he would baptize them?
And the main astronomer in the Vatican, Guy Contalmano, said that he would baptize an alien too, but only if she asked me. So there's definitely this, and it's a very Jesuit thing too. Of course, the Pope's a Jesuit. The Vatican astronomers have been Jesuits going back years, and it seems to be that a lot of the pro-alien line, the party line, is coming from the Jesuits, which is interesting too.
So
I was shocked and appalled and terrified that the Catholic Church was promoting the idea of aliens and extraterrestrial life with no acknowledgement of the occult, what I call origins and engines of the whole thing. So I felt honestly like I was being, it seems weird that I was being called to, you know, give this message in some small way and hopefully reach some people about something very different than, you know, sort of the party line Catholic theologians are what they're saying.
So let me rewind a little bit here and let me talk to you a little bit about, I want to start with biblical sightings when it comes to where people of science start to point out things in the Bible. Because it seems like when people of science go to point out things and try to justify alien existence, the first thing they say is, well, aliens must be okay, UFOs must be okay, because they're cited in the Bible. You talk about a wheel within a wheel. You talk about who walked with Moses throughout the desert. Well, of course, you know, you talk about the cloud that followed him, or you talk about whatever it was that followed him. It had to have been an alien, right? So they must be friends. They must be friendly. How do you answer things like that?
It's interesting. Far better scholars than I, Christian scholars, have looked at this question, most notably Dr. Michael Heiser, who passed away, was it earlier this year or last year? I think it was earlier this year. In fact, he was very much into UFO stuff. I don't know if you ever had him on the show.
I'm trying to remember if we did or not.
I think he was named as one of the top 100 most influential people in ufology. Mm-hmm. But he said that he had not. So he was a great biblical scholar and also very into UFOs. He said it was his, you know, his hobby. And everyone always looked at him for his opinion about all of these things. And he would roll his eyes when people would bring up the stuff in the Bible that they said was UFO sightings, especially the wheel within the wheel. And the number one thing about that is that angels actually have very different appearances than what we think, you know, humanoid figures with wings. They have really weird, oftentimes seem mechanical, seem like different, not even really beings at all. They have lots of different eyes. They have all kinds of different heads, legs, different parts of them that don't seem to be parts of bodies at all. So that's one thing about that. And again, these there's a lot of the people that talk about the things in the Bible, like you already mentioned, they're trying to take the supernaturalism out of the Bible, which is a big part of what I was seeing when I started to read this book. And this goes back to John Keel and Jacques Vallée, some of the earliest secular, at least agnostic, if not atheist, researchers into UFOs. I mean, decades ago, they were pointing out that these were not physical beings. You know, this is not something from science as we know it in the modern world. This is something that's very different. And these are interdimensional beings. So there have been, you know, and you say scientists are pointing to the Bible to demonstrate that these things are scientific, materialistic. But all through this trend, you know, again, going back to Vallée and to Keel, it's really not that way. And I think a lot of Christians look to like what Keel and Vallée said and said, like, look, even these secular scientists think that these are not physical objects. But what they have been trying to do and what a lot of their followers do is to, eradicate the supernatural. They want to bring all of these experiences that we have called supernatural for millennia under this new banner of UFO experiences. And they're saying that these are not spiritual experiences, but they are part of a, it's really kind of a new materialism that includes the non-material. And that's the thing that I found most disturbing about it is that, and that was what Dr. Heiser found most disturbing about what Bible study had come to be and what Christians had come to understand about the Bible, is that the supernaturality had been sort of scrubbed out of it.
Yeah.
And so what he was trying to do with his research is to bring back the supernaturality, the angels and the demons that are all around us all the time that we don't acknowledge anymore because it doesn't fit in with our enlightened worldview. And I have seen that in ufology, even from Catholic scholars and other, you know, religious scholars, and certainly from secular scholars, that they are trying to take the supernatural and make it part of the natural world, which it's not. And that, I think, is the thing that's the most insidious about it. So that was a very broad answer very specific question.
No, there's plenty of examples in this book, The Devil in Dreamland, that are quite alarming. I mean, you talk about, you draw the parallel between demonic infestation and, or even a demonic, the beginning of demonic possession and what it's like to be abducted by an alien. And the parallels are stunning, and not just stunning, but almost scary. I wonder if you can draw those parallels for our audience just quickly as to, you know, how the beginning of demonic possession and a UFO visit are really one and the same.
Yeah, I think for me, the most striking example of that was in when I started to look at the early contactees in the UFO history in the 1950s, there were a group of experiencers that are known as the contactees, a large C, you know, uppercase C. And these were like the first experiencers. Before the abductions started, it was these visitations. And it was these extended visitations where, you know, the person developed a deep relationship with one particular alien, you know, in quotes. And as someone who studied demonology for a long time, and I'm sure a lot of your viewers too, and you too, you know, is very familiar with the work of Malachi Martin, the late Jesuit priest and exorcist. And immediately when I was reading about the experiences and reading the writings of the early contactees, immediately a thought of Malachi Martin's book, Hostage to the Devil, where he wrote particularly about one case of possession that involved a DJ, actually, that he called Jamzy in the book. He was originally from New York. He went to California to work, and he began to be visited by this being that one day appeared in the backseat of his car. And they developed this deep relationship to the point where this thing was always there with him. And he called himself, this being called itself Uncle Ponto. And sometimes it would help Jamzy with his career. Sometimes it would, you know, sort of try to sabotage like romantic relationships. So it was very much involved in everything that he was doing. And he really came to rely on it. And this is familiarization, and it's a specific kind of possession. And it comes up over and over again in these early contactee cases. And then later too, where the person becomes just almost inextricably connected with this being. And they are, Tim, they're identical.
Yeah.
You know, they get the knowledge, they get ideas for building things, they get, and then there start to be physical effects, such as malaise, there are scratches, there are burns, there is radiation, burns and things like that. And they become just completely dependent on one another. And this was just astounding to me to see this. There's another famous case in ufology that people always laugh at. And I laughed at it too when I first heard about it. It's the case of this so-called alien named Valiant Thor. Have you heard about Valiant Thor before?
Yeah.
Valiant Thor, for those not familiar, was supposedly this alien from Venus who visited Earth and was taken to the Eisenhower White House. And one of the staff in the White House happened to be at the same church as a man named Frank Stranges, who was into UFOs. And so she told him, you know, on the QT, there is an alien at the White House. And since you know about UFOs, we'd like you to come in and talk to him. So Frank Stranges went on to write this book called Alien, the Stranger at the Pentagon, about his relationship with Valiant Thor. And it's kind of outrageous because Valiant Thor turns out to be not only a Venusian, but a Christian. So, but like, they're not fallen. Okay. So they're Christians on Venus and they live underground. Of course, that's why we haven't seen them. But he would talk to Frank Stranges about Christianity. It was so weird. And, you know, you try to think like, why would this guy, and Frank Stranges ended up, he turned out to be a shyster who was selling fake degrees for his fake seminary and stuff like that. So not a great guy, right?
Right.
But you think, why did he write this? Why did he make up the story? And you think like, did he make it up to convince Christians that aliens are okay? Or was he part of some government psyop that was trying to do that? You know, a la like the Collins Elite from Nick Redfern's book. And he's like, why did he do this? And so I'm reading his book and there, so this Christian, Frank Stranges, you know, pastor, mm-hmm. is writing this book. And at the end of the book, before Valiant Thor leaves the planet to go back to Venus, you know, in this poignant episode, he gives instructions to Frank Stranges about this ritual that he should do and teach people to do that will make the humanity better and world a better place. And it's a witchcraft ritual. Like, I recognized it, like, you know, like, this seems weird. And I looked it up and it even has the same name. It's called the Ring of Fire. And witches have been doing it for centuries.
Oh, wow.
So you think, why would this Christian pastor put this in his story?
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of weird things like that. To the point where, you know, you get to the point where like, I'm going to look this up because I know it's some demonic thing. And the other thing that came up over and over is that oftentimes the names that are given to by these aliens are the names of gods, ancient gods and demons, fallen angels,
yeah,
that are part of like the lexicon of known fallen angels and gods, which in for Christians, it's the same thing, right? The ancient gods are fallen angels, demons.
Right.
And over, you've got Ashtar and, you know, Ishtaroth, and you've got some Yazeh, who is Billy Myers' contact. He's one of the famous experiencers in Switzerland, mm-hmm. who has had thousands of these contact episodes with Semyaza, which is the name of like the head of the fallen angels, right? Like the watcher angels, and in the Book of Enoch. And it's just over and over again, like every single one of them. Indrid Cold in the Mothman prophecies, who was, you know, who had this relationship with Woodrow Derenberger. Indra was a Hindu god. And it's just like every single one of them, their names are identical to these fallen angels.
Which should almost bring up a hint of skepticism. The name alone would make you think that one, I mean, if you're a demon that wants to trick someone, would make the rest of the skeptics out there go, wait a minute, you're making this up because I can trace this back to a Hindu god, or I can trace this back to the Bible, mm-hmm. or I can trace right. this back to the Book of Enoch, or you're making this name up, first of all. There's no way that you could have been visited by an alien because this is a, you know, this is a name from history. But second, it's almost like you're being tricked in that way. When you talk about Valiant Thor, he was telling Frank Stranges things like, well, we don't necessarily, when he asked him things like, well, do you have a Bible there on Venus? He said, no, we don't use Bibles. We just have it in our heads or something to that effect. you know, things that are just kind of odd. I mean, you know, things that don't really compute.
Exactly. They're just odd.
Right.
Case too, with Valiant Thor, I almost fell out of my chair because Valiant Thor appeared in the back seat of Frank Strange's car.
Yeah.
Just the way Uncle Ponto had with Jamsey, the DJ back in California.
Right. And things that, you know, just they're a little off or a little to the left and don't quite compute. Right. And you know, if you're going to have some sort of alien visitation, you would think they'd come down in their craft, they'd land on your lawn, they would appear in some way that would be, I don't want to say grand or would make a statement, or you would think it would happen in
normal.
Yeah.
It would just be normal.
Yeah. Like a physical way, like the way, right. You know, I don't want to quote Star Trek here or Star Wars or something, but you would think they would land physically in a craft. They'd show up on your lawn. They'd come off of their spaceship and they'd say, "Hey, we just landed here from a different planet," much like we would if we were landing on the moon. Right. Not just materialize, right? Right. I just there's certain things that don't ring true in certain scenarios. Although I can hear skeptics saying, well, Tim, they have better technology. They can, you know, they can just materialize out of nowhere and, you know, they've
right, and communicate telepathically, which just also happens to be an occult way to communicate, you know.
Yeah.
It's all because they're so much more advanced than we are.
Yeah. There's some strange ways that happen here, and there's some strange parallels that are kind of drawn between the demonic and aliens that you've drawn quite brilliantly. The book is almost 400 pages. I mean, you haven't just thrown things up in the air and said, well, I think this and this, and then you call it a day. You've taken and you've drawn case by case in many different cases, a lot of different cases in ufology, and said, this is why this looks suspicious. This is why this looks suspicious.
That's kind of what I was trying to do, was just to go over and over and over again with case after case, situation after situation, to sort of just overwhelm, you know, the reader with like, okay, this is kind of weird, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not just do one thing. Because a lot of the book, you know, for people that are into ufology, it's a lot of, you know, unkind critics will say it's rehashed, you know, stuff that everybody knows in ufology, but not those connections, you know, those, I think it's very unique in that those, it's only somebody that would have been around the occult stuff and the supernatural and the demonological stuff that would instantly see those connections that hadn't been seen before. It was like, one thing that was just, I think the thing where I said like, okay, what the hell is going on here was when, and I don't know if you got to this part in the book, when I talk about ITC and EVP, and mm-hmm. I was talking about Whitley Strieber.
Yes.
Who is kind, you know, I call him the poster child for abductees. You know, there is nobody who is more famous than him as a contactee and an abductee. And he says that he has an implant. And mm-hmm. that it helps him to write. It makes his ideas richer, and he gets words through a slit in his eye that he can write better. And as you hear the story unfolds, you find out that his dead wife is actually communicating with him mm-hmm. through this implant as well. And one day, and he writes about this in one of his books, one day he's visited by one of the so-called visitors that he says has been with him for all of these years. And he asks who invented this implant. And he said it was Konstantin Raudive, the dead Latvian engineer who practically started EVP research, right, in the 1950s. And he's a Catholic too.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Like Konstantin Raudive, what? You know, and Konstantin Radovay, of course, anyone who's into EVP history knows that he has called people on the phone after since his death. You know, he has talked through countless, you know, ghost boxes and recorders and everything since his death. So he is like a huge player in like afterlife communication, claiming that he's helping to build this bridge, you know, from the other side. And it was at that moment when I read that Konstantin Radovay had invented his implant. I didn't even know what to think anymore, except that there was something really, I don't know, insidious going on with the whole thing.
Well, Whitley won't call them aliens. He calls them visitors.
Right.
Yeah. He refuses to call them aliens.
Yeah. And it's so tragic to listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he admits that he is trapped in this relationship with these things.
Yeah.
And he admitted that it was very Faustian, that there was a moment when he decided he was going to welcome them in, even though he knew it was, you know, wrong and it was going to be bad for him. And yet he goes back and forth, you know, and he never walks away from it. And he always wants more and more and more of a relationship with them. And it's really sad because he's such a emotional person. And it's just very heartbreaking to listen to him talk about his relationship with them. And he's a self-professed Catholic too. I talk about that a lot in the book. You know, the title of his first book was Communion, you know, the bestseller. And yet he's written in his blog that he doesn't believe apparently in the Blessed Sacrament as a Catholic. And yet he apparently believes in his communion with these things, you know, that, like you said, he doesn't even say that they're aliens, and he knows that they are dark. And he has said he knows that you cannot have relationship with them without eventually going to a very dark place and threatening your soul.
So
and yet he can't walk away.
How does that make you feel as a Catholic then? Knowing that.
It makes me angry. That's why I wrote this book. It makes me so angry. There are a few, you know, much more well-known writers than I and scholars than I in, you know, sort of the popular Catholic world. One of them is Daniel O'Connor, and he wrote an 800 page book that came out last year called Only Man Bears His Image, where he goes through thousands of reasons why there cannot be aliens. You cannot believe in aliens and be a Christian, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's instances from the Catechism of the Church, the Magisterium, visions of the saints, like the Bible, the whole nine yards, right? And, so, yeah, I mean, he has a YouTube channel, too, and he gets really mad about the alien thing as well and has talked a lot about it and blogged a lot about it. In fact, he wrote a really nice blurb for the book cover. But, yeah, it makes us so angry, very few of us, because it seems so reckless. And but you can see when you listen to these theologians and scholars talk about their opinion about it, and they're wanting to believe in aliens and support of alien belief, is that it comes from the culture that we've all grown up in, where we have all been brought up with the films and the science fiction books and this writing going back to the 19th century, that is really all based in theosophy, you know, this whole occult belief system that relied a lot on extraterrestrials, especially Venusians, you know, beings from Venus, supposedly.
Yeah.
And that's where most science fiction comes from, especially the stuff that talks about extraterrestrial life. And granted, a lot of technology has also come from science fiction, inspiring people to, you know, become scientists and to invent things. Jack Parsons, who I talk a lot about in the book, was inspired by amazing stories to be a rocket scientist, you know. So it has inspired a lot of good things, you know, and innovations, but it's also inspired a lot of weird belief systems, and it also comes from a very weird place. And so I did a lot of work in the book about that, looking at the history of science fiction and the ideas of a lot of people that are behind the very famous now stories and movies that influenced all of us growing up, including theologians, you know, that they've grown up wanting there to be life on other planets, you know, darn it, you know, and it's not easy. It's not easy or desirable for them to give that up.
Right.
And that is a very difficult, and it's also a weird thing. And if you go back to the history of science fiction, you find that a lot of science fiction was channeled. So the authors got it through automatic writing and channeling, including Whitley Strieber. And it's kind of weird, you know, and especially like Raymond Palmer, who was the editor of Amazing Stories. By the time he became editor of the magazine, which was so influential, and he also founded Fate magazine and, you know, other magazines, all, you know, on occult and unexplained themes. He, by the time he became editor, he was way into the occult. He was a firm believer in something called the OWASPE Bible, which was a channeled book that was kind of a mashup of Christianity and other ancient religions and extraterrestrial stuff. And that informed like everything he did and all of the work that he chose to publish. And again, you cannot overestimate the influence that this early science fiction had on our culture. It just absolutely inseparable, you know? And the more you look at it, the more you just think, you know, again, what the hell is going on and has been going on for all this time? There is no doubt that there is some kind of an intelligent forming and shaping of our culture through these narratives. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. In fact, I want to take a break right here because I want to slowly turn the conversation to that intelligence that's forming and shaping that narrative. In fact, when we come back, I want to talk about something that you alluded to earlier in the conversation, something that Nick Redfern brought up. And I want to talk about the Collins Elite, what it is, and whether there's something even nefarious that's running things behind the government and the government itself, and whether they've known about this all along, and whether they're the ones who are, or whether there is a secret shadow government that is secretly working behind the scenes with whatever this is, demonic, alien, or otherwise, that's trying to maybe shape something a little more than nefarious and set this narrative on us. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Ursula Bielski is our guest. The book is The Devil in Dreamland, Catholic Faith, UFOs, Occultism, and the End of the Supernatural. We got a link in the description of this program so you can go get that book right now. It's a fascinating read, folks. It really is. If you want to open your eyes a little bit as to what is actually out there. So when we come back, we'll talk about the Collins Elite, about Nick Redfern's research, and about whether there's something more nefarious even behind governmental doors. We'll talk about that when we get back right here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a two-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. My guest, Ursula Bielski, the name of the book, The Devil in Dreamland, Catholic Faith, UFOs, Occultism, and the End of the Supernatural. Before we went to the break, we were talking about things that are shaping the narrative in the country and the narrative about UFOs and the fact that there may be a little bit something more to it. In fact, the fact that, well, let's just call it what it is, that there's a demonic presence there, and that maybe that the government is a little bit more than what we think it is, and that they're hiding something, and that they're maybe even doing something a little bit more to convince us that, well, what should we call it, Ursula, that maybe they want to create an event or two themselves to make us think that, what's a good way of putting it? That we should fall in line, put it that way, with our alien overlords. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yeah, I think it is a very good way of putting it. And a lot of people have talked about this and written about this idea that there is some kind of a plan to and goal to make us believe that, to use the title of Lou Elizondo's new book, Imminent, that there is an imminent visitation, disclosure of these beings that's upon us right now. And that they have some reason they want us to believe that, even though it's not true. So, yeah.
Yeah, Lou Elizondo's book is kind of blowing up with everybody. In fact,
it's huge.
A lot of the speakers that were at Michigan Paracon, they were reading it on the way to Paracon. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I noticed. Yeah. I saw that in a lot of people's Facebook posts. And I was just... The whole thing is just very distressing to me. When I first heard Lou talk about, you know, his involvement with all of this, was it last year when the congressional hearing was, I thought, wow, okay. Cause he was talking about members, you know, officials in the Pentagon believing that these were demonic beings and that we should not be involved in this kind of research into UFOs. I was like, this is interesting, you know? Mm-hmm. Okay. And, I don't know. I now have read the book and discovered that he was not only apparently involved in torture at Guantanamo Bay, which is, a different story. I mean, I know it's the military and all that, but that's a little weird.
Yeah.
But that he was involved in remote viewing, like so many of these other governmental agents and officials that have been involved in this. And in fact, there are, there are Catholic scholars and researchers that have said things as maybe seemingly extreme as that a lot of the ills of our society in the last 60 years, they believe are from the government participating in all of this occult stuff. So, a particularly remote viewing, but, there have been researchers that have claimed informants that have claimed that the government was even doing things as extreme as human sacrifice, to the end of attempting to communicate with these things they call extraterrestrials. So, it's all pretty shady for sure, and pretty dark for sure.
Now, let me ask you this, Ursula. Do you think, and this is going to seem weird, do you think that initially they reached out to these things thinking they were what they were, that they were actual extraterrestrials and not demonic, and then maybe they got double-crossed and found out that they were actually true demonic and just went, well, we're in for a penny, in for a pound.
That's very possible because, when we look back at the initial contacts back in the 1950s, those original, uppercase contact, C contactees, that was how they were communicating with them. They were communicating with channeling, with meditation. They were even using, what we now call EVP. They were turning on radios, and trying to talk to these beings through radios. And even in today, a lot of current researchers in ufology that are well known, like Stephen Greer, who is a former emergency room doctor. He is now one of the leading figures, in this disclosure movement. He started off, going out into the desert and shining like lights into the sky to try and attract UFOs. And he found that a much more effective way to attract them was through meditation and channeling. And so it's something that definitely runs through all of it.
Yeah. I'm actually kind of ashamed to say this. One of the, when we were on the Jericho cruise, we had set up a UFO summoning experiment when we were in the Bermuda Triangle, and we had gotten it from John Tenney. And it was just essentially that's what it was. It was like almost like a meditation experiment. You take and you clear your mind, you put out the aforementioned, it's an intention experiment. You put it out that you want to see these things, they appear. And we actually got three of them to appear off the starboard side of the ship.
Ray Boucher, who also talked a little bit about, and he encouraged me to keep writing this book because I was so many times I just almost gave up because it was just all so weird and distressing. But he, he was involved with Nick Redfern and gave him the information about the Collins Leap, which I know we're going to talk about.
Yes. Yeah.
But he had looked into a case of three college students. This was in Indiana, who had done the same thing. They were going out into the farm field at night to try and summon UFOs. And they started having, having attacks, like going back, to their homes and being attacked in their houses. And again, it's so similar to ghost hunting. You go to these haunted places and you try to talk to the spirits and you come home and suddenly you're waking up, with bruises and scratches and stuff is moving around the house. It's identical, and this is something that it's always talked about too, with Skinwalker Ranch. They talk about they call it the hitchhiker effect. The journalists that have been looking at Skinwalker Ranch, where they say that, the government agents visiting Skinwalker Ranch go home and suddenly they're seeing cryptids in the backyard and there's balls of light flying around the house, which is something that Lou Elizondo said too.
Yeah.
He said there was orbs of light flying around his house, after he started doing remote viewing. And it's like, really? I'm really shocked to hear that, But I think, what you said about that perhaps in the beginning, they believed that this was the way to communicate with extraterrestrials is absolutely right, because that is what they had seen in the earliest years of the contactees.
Let me take a sidetrack here. Have you watched the Skinwalker Ranch program on TV?
Some of it. No, I'm not like a huge fan, but I've seen a good number of episodes.
When you watch that program and you watch some of the guys who are in there now, Are you noticing when you sit and watch what you've watched, are you seeing when you see what, trying to form the question I want to form here, and that's this. You know, when they report, well, there's paranormal activity here, there's what they think is alien activity here, when they're segmenting that activity, are you sitting there and going, this isn't segmented at all, this is all one thing?
Yeah, and not just segmented, but that it's a new thing to them. That's one of the most frustrating things, is that you have, you know, secular scientific people that are saying, it's really amazing. Like, people will come to Skinwalker Ranch and they'll go home and they're having things happen in the house, you know? You're like, yeah, been there, done that, you know, like, it happens all the time, you know? And they don't have any, and you talked about before we started the show, about, and I know we're going to talk about this, but invoking the name of Jesus during abduction experiences. And I actually had Joe Jordan, who's the main researcher into that phenomenon, on my own show earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And he had talked about this a lot. And he, you know, he said the same thing that I had found, is that a lot of these secular researchers, they just don't have the language for this. They don't understand it because they don't have an experience of the spiritual. So they don't know how these things work and they don't recognize it. Okay. So it's frustrating to watch that too, which is another reason that I really wanted to write the book.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if they'll do that on the show, on the Skinwalker Ranch show, if they'll at one point or another bring out clergy and try that and see if it works. I mean, although they are a science-based program, if they'll at one point or another bring out the religious aspect or the theological aspect of things and say, you know what, this is the one thing we haven't tried, and see if it rebukes any of the activity that's going on there.
Except they don't want to stop it. Nobody ever wants to stop it. That's the problem.
That's true. Once you've had success, you don't want to stop what's going on out there. That's true.
Well, the biggest channeler is Chris Bledsoe. Are you familiar with Chris Bledsoe?
I've heard. Yeah.
He wrote a book called UFO of God. It's a huge bestseller. Mm-hmm. And it's about his experiences in Wilmington, North Carolina, I think is where he lives. And he had a lot of issues in his life with, I think his wife passed away. He had Crohn's disease for many years, a lot of physical and mental suffering. And he was out on a fishing trip with some coworkers and his son. And he literally went out in the woods and was crying to heaven for help because he was really suffering so badly. And he had this visitation. And his son had gone missing too that night. And so his friends were looking for both of them. They found Chris, and then Chris went with them and they found his son. And his son was being like held paralyzed by these beings. And after that night, Chris started to see them all the time. Other family members saw them, these balls of light. And then he started to realize that he could summon them. And then he started summoning this light creature that who he calls the lady. It's like all very like Marian, you know, it was very strange. Yeah. And he became friends with people from NASA, from other government agencies, who started coming over his house and hanging around with him. You know, people like John Alexander and, you know, like these really well-known people. And who, you know, one of them even wrote a foreword to the book. So it's very weird, you know? And one of the representatives from NASA told him that they have known about this lady being for many years, and that she is the same being that manifested at Fatima, Portugal, you know, during the famous Marian apparitions. So this is the kind of stuff that's going on, you know, in the government. And it's all very weird. But yeah, I mean, there does seem to be an awareness, definite awareness by the government that this is a spiritual or religious thing. But what are they doing? What do we know about it? Nothing. We know nothing about what they're doing. And there's always these books that come out, like Lou Elizondo's books, like it's coming. We're just about to find out what's happening, but it never happens. So, yeah.
Speaking of, it seems like the government has more than a toe in the water when it comes to that, yet mm-hmm. there's plausible deniability. You know, we talk about the Arrow meetings and, well, yeah. we don't know. You bring us your evidence and we'll take a look mm-hmm. at it and we'll determine if we know what's going on or not, yet they seem to know everything that's going on and can tell you, you know, about what happened at Fatima, and we're aware of the lady, mm-hmm. right? Let's talk a little bit about Nick Redfern's research. Can you tell us what exactly the Collins Elite is and what nefarious dealings it has?
Yeah, I cannot more highly recommend Nick Redfern's book, Final Events, which is about the Collins Elite and the whole lead up to it and aftermath of it. But also, again, Ray Boucher, who is an Anglican priest and ufologist, who has written a lot of papers about this whole subject. And you can find those for free on academia.edu. He was actually the person that got Nick Redfern involved with okay. the Collins Elite situation. And according to Ray Boucher, two men from the Department of Defense, they claimed, came to him and said that the government was involved in these occult activities, trying to contact these beings that they thought were extraterrestrials, but turned out to be demonic. Mm-hmm. And they were very uncomfortable with the whole situation. They didn't know what to do about it. And Boucher told Nick Redfern about it, and he got very involved in the research of this group that called themselves the Collins Elite. And it's all very weird. And the Collins Elite traced themselves back to an incident that everyone in ufology knows about. It's sort of this folklore about in ufology about the beginnings of the UFO flap that started in 1947. And so the Collins Elite, these two men said the Collins Elite had been formed because of the UFO flap that started in 1947 with these sightings, with Roswell and the sightings of Kenneth Arnold. And that some people were tracing the outbreak of the UFO sightings to things that were done by Aleister Crowley and Jack Parsons, the founder of Jet Propulsion Laboratories, who was a huge follower of Crowley and an occultist himself. And apparently the government took Jack Parsons aside shortly before he blew himself up in his lab and said, there's everybody seeing these UFOs. What do you know about it? Because they knew he was into all of the stuff. And he apparently admitted that it was his doing, because he had conducted this ritual called the Babylon Working with L. Ron Hubbard, who founded Scientology. You hear this stuff and you think, this is not a true story, but it's a true story. So the founder of Jet Propulsion Laboratory and L. Ron Hubbard went out into the desert and conducted sex magic rituals to bring about the manifestation of this moon child that he would have this Babylon character with. They would have this magical baby that would bring about the end of Judeo-Christian civilization. So Jack Parsons kind of admits that he opened up this rift in space and time, and these things had flown through, right? So the UFO era started because of this huge occult ritual that Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard did. And that's basically what the whole Collins Elite saga starts with. And it goes all through, the history of psychic spying and remote viewing that involves the Soviet Union. And essentially the heart of it is that the government got so involved in these occult activities in trying to form relationships with these beings so that, you know, of course, they could weaponize their powers mm-hmm. for government use, right? Military use. And so if you believe the story, the story says that the government has been indulging in occult activities for decades, and has entered into basically this relationship and a pact with these diabolical beings that we first thought were extraterrestrials, but found out they weren't. But that didn't stop us from just keeping going.
Yeah.
So that's, for some people, a lot of people, that's the real secret government. That's the real story that can't be. That's why disclosure can't happen, because as Luis Elizondo has said several times, it's just too bad.
Yeah.
Too bad for anybody to find out. You know, it's not that other governments have far superior technology. It's not that there's life on other planets and it would freak people out or destroy religion. It's that our government has been doing occult, you know, demonic rituals with demons for decades.
And with that in mind, I mean, what do you think? I mean, this is pure speculation, but what do you think would be the end result if the American public finds out that their own leadership has been dealing in the occult and trading this for even technology? Like, say, the iPhone you're holding in your hand is the result of demonic technology. I mean, do you think that turns everything on its ear?
You know, honestly, Tim, I don't know. Everything is so weird now. And it seems to me, and I've heard a lot of other people say this, that everything has become so strange and so, you know, with the world of fake news and everything else, you don't know who to believe. You don't know what a legitimate news story is. You don't know what propaganda is. We know for a fact that there have been these seriously established relationships between billionaire investors like Robert Bigelow, Skinwalker, and others. And then, you know, people high up in the government like Harry Reid. And so there's these liaisons between the government and private individuals that are heavily invested in the occult. Robert Bigelow, you know, started out talking about UFOs, and now he wants to know. He gave a prize for the best essay last year about the afterlife, and the new contest is, what's the best way to communicate with discarnate beings?
Yep.
You know, and my first thought when I heard that was like, he is totally working with the government to find out. The government is getting him to run this contest to find out how to communicate with these beings, because the government can't do it, but he can. And we know for a fact he had a $22 million contract with the government, you know, so we know they're all working together. So who do you believe? What would you believe? Would people believe anything like that? You know, or do people just believe what they think these days? I don't know if that makes any sense, but it seems that the idea of knowledge has become so unsteady and so unreliable. I think that's how best to say it, that I don't know what people would, if people would believe anything anymore, and would just, they live in their own world that, you know, is so self-absorbed that I don't really know what would affect people to the point where everything would be turned upside down, as you put it.
I think because we're in an era where, you know, basically there's no such thing as redacting anymore or redacting, that especially when it comes to government contracts and basically anything having to do with the government, we've gone to privatization, right? SpaceX, everything is private. I shouldn't say everything, but half the space program is privatized, right? I think there's a reason why contracts are being given out right now, because anything that may be, or things are kept off the books, anything that might be a little bit questionable is being privatized. Right. So
yeah, I think, you know, that's something that's also just, it is just impossible to, I just think it's just really impossible to disregard when you're looking at all of this and people insist that this has got to be what they call off-planet technology, when there are so many, you know, 50 years ago, any superior technology was from the government, right?
Sure,
it was from government research.
Yeah.
Today, that's far, far from the reality. And not just our government, but any government. There are all of these private sector companies that have billions and billions and billions of dollars and the best people in the world, the best researchers. We don't know anything about what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so to say, oh, and you hear very, you know, very respected scientists and scholars saying it's not possible that this technology is from our planet.
Yeah.
And that's just, we can't know that.
Yeah.
I just feel like we can't know that.
Well, you can't, in today's economy, in today's society, you can't have the government developing technology because, especially in this economy, you can't, I mean, it trying to form my words carefully here. You can't give one company a leg up over another. So that's
right.
Why you're privatizing everything and then having that private company come back and sell to the highest bidder. The government can't be selling to the highest bidder. So I think that's right. The other reason why SpaceX is being privatized and other companies are being privatized or given the contract.
Yeah. And like you said, there's a lot of things that the government can't do, these private agencies and companies can do.
Yeah.
Absolutely can do. They can do whatever they want to do.
But with that also comes some nefarious stuff. I mean, you can also set an agenda. So if you want to set an agenda, you can, and it can be buried in some book somewhere, or it can be buried altogether and you don't have to write it down. Whereas with the government, you have to document everything. So if you want to keep some things off the books, you can do that. When it's privatized, you can just simply have a hands-off type deal.
You know, this actually brings up something very, very interesting that a lot of people have taken note of, which is that many of these, tech researchers that have founded all these tech companies, and they're also involved in aerospace industry, people from NASA. I'm thinking also of Travis Taylor from Skinwalker Ranch. You know, a lot of these people have gone on the record and they've complained because they want the alien technology to make money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they want to make money, and it's very not altruistic, it's not about, life on other planets and humanity. And it's about money, which is to me, and I talk about this at the end of the book, that, there's all of these kind of dramatic things that point to this phenomena being demonic and spiritual.
Yeah.
But the main thing is the money, the grift, and the lies. There's just lies and grift surrounding all of it,
mm-hmm.
And that's the heart of the devil, right? So even if you don't believe the dramatic, crazy things, that is what, the devil is, the money-making and the lies, especially, that is just everywhere in ufology.
Yeah. As we start to wrap up today, Ursula, I want to ask you this question, and that's this. It's easy to see, I'm going to use a pun here, the devil in the details, with a lot of what you've written in the book. But I want to ask you very much a pure and altruistic question, and that's this. We've seen a lot of the demonic behind what could happen here, but I want to ask you a very pure question, and that's this. In your mind, and even in your theological background, can you see, and I know you answered this partially in the book, but can you see a scenario where God may actually have made multiple races in the universe, and that there is a non-demonic race out there on a different planet that may actually be trying to make contact with us here on Earth, that is not demonic? It's an actual race of different people. Or do you believe we're the only race out there in the universe?
Right. And the answer to that is a purely theological answer. I was, I was raised like pretty much, I think everybody was raised probably, or at least half the people, I asked my very devotedly Catholic mom when I was little, are there is there life, you know, are there beings on other planets? And she told me what her father had told her, you know, also devout Catholic grandpa told her when she was little, you know, God made the whole, this huge universe. Why would he only put life on one planet, which is, it's known as the limiting God argument in alien, you know, theology. And the answer to that is that the real limitation on God is putting our ideas about things on him. So us saying that it's ridiculous to make this entire universe and only put life on one planet. So that's our opinion. And that has nothing to do with the way that God thinks. So that's one thing. Like I said, my book wasn't meant to go into the theology of it. And I will recommend Only Man Bears His Image for 800 pages of theology about why you can't be a Christian and believe in life on other planets. But it, you know, it is, if you're going to say you're a Christian, especially if you're going to say you're a Catholic, as much as I would love to think that there was life on other planets, there are other beings, it's so exciting to think about, so wonderful to think about. When you look at the theology as a Christian, you simply can't, it just doesn't work. And so it's not a question of, you know, my opinion or my thoughts or feelings about it. It's a theological question that I had to face and had to answer honestly. And that's a big problem that I see with, you know, the very vocal Catholics, theologians and scholars, is that they're not being honest about what the theology says, because as I see it, they want to believe so much the other way. So it's a theological answer and it might not be the answer that I would like, but it's the only answer there is, as someone who's a Christian that's looked at the theology.
Okay. You'd mentioned it earlier in the program that you had stepped back from investigating. Do you see, and especially with the things that have gone on in your life, do you ever see a point in your life where you go back into that field, or is that no longer an option?
Oh, yeah. And I have not stepped away from investigating. I did completely pull away from everything at first. Mm-hmm. I was just, you know, kind of like once bitten, right? Mm-hmm. But I felt like, and I think this book was part of it, I felt like that was not the right response to it. And I did talk to a priest about it and realized that what I needed to do was to be in the situation to try and share with people what I had discovered. And so I still do investigate, but it's in the way that I used to, you know, before I got into spirit communication. So I do all of the, you know, I'll use all of the other procedures that I used for 30 years before I got into spirit communication. And then I try to, you know, use the platforms that I have as a writer and with my YouTube channel to kind of share with people the dangers of all of this and information about the overlap in these phenomena and how similar they are. So I'm a little voice, but I'm hoping that, you know, even if, like you say, if one person hears it and starts to think about it, maybe I did some good. So I'm still in the paranormal and still in paranormal research and investigation, just much more carefully than I was for a long time.
Okay. Well, let people know where you're at as far as the show and when it airs.
Yes. I have got everything that I do is on my website, which is worldofthesupernatural.com. And you can find my YouTube channel on there, my books and all blogs and all the other kind of stuff I'm doing.
All right. Well, Ursula Bielski, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the big program. And again, we'll look forward to picking up the book, The Devil in Dreamland, Catholic Faith, UFOs, Occultism, and the End of the Supernatural. Ursula, I want to thank you so much for being with us again.
And just a wonderful time with you, Tim. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I want to thank Ursula Bielski for being with us today. The Devil in Dreamland, Catholic Faith, UFOs, the Occult, and the End of the Supernatural is available right now. We have a link in the description of this program so you can go out and purchase that book. Folks, we didn't even get to most of the stuff that's in the book. We got to a little bit of it today, but The book is so informative. I mean, it really does go through the history of ufology, and it connects things from a Catholic perspective as to why the occult is so involved in ufology. And even like Ursula said, the Collins elite, how it connects in there, and how there's conspiracy in there, and how the occult hooks up to ufology. And it's an interesting read, even if you don't believe what it is that Ursula had to say today. Just the conspiracy theory behind it, and to read into the conspiracy of it, is incredibly fascinating. And I wanted to bring Ursula on today to delve into that side of it, because I really do believe there's something else behind this UFO phenomena that is just bizarre. There's a piece of this missing that we're not looking into. I've never quite bought the line of they come in peace, you know? I've always looked at the alien films and thought that rings a little more true to me than the light and airy, they're here to save us from ourselves line. That never, something doesn't ring true at all with that line. It just feels icky. It feels false to me. So maybe I'm the one who's off, but I don't feel like that rings true at all. Not at all. So if you disagree with me, tim@darknessradio.com, let me know why. Let me know why you feel that way and what experiences you've had. If you're an abductee and you've had a positive experience, let me know and share it with us for Parashare on Wednesdays. I'd like to know what experience it is you've had and why you feel that maybe this is a positive phenomenon. Maybe I'm off. I'd like to hear from you. I'm very curious as to what it is you've gone through. So please let me know. Got some exciting shows coming up in September. I'm not going to lie, folks. It is going to get dark throughout September, but I ask you to hang in there, because the darker it gets, the more exciting and the more interesting it's going to get in September here. And we've got some exciting shows both on the true crime side and on the paranormal side of things. So hang in there. It's going to be an interesting ride, that's for sure. A couple of notes for you before we leave you this weekend. If you're in the Twin Cities area, I am going to be this Saturday out at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Oak Grove with Jelly Bean and Julia's. I'll be schlepping ribs out at the Rib Fest this weekend with Jelly Bean and Julia's. I'm going to help out Corey and Jelly Bean and Julia's at the Rib Fest. So come on out. Come on out to St. Patrick's Catholic Church for the Rib Fest. I'm going to do some work this weekend. That's what I'm going to do. You know, I always tell you to be a light in someone's darkness. Well, I'm going to help out a good cause. So, and not only that, but I like getting out on occasion and just helping out a buddy. And Corey had asked me if I wanted to help out. I helped out last year, and it was fun. I had a lot of fun just getting out and talking to people. I'll throw on my Darkness Radio t-shirt and promote the show and just serve some ribs, because people really like Corey's ribs, especially at the Rib Fest, and try to help Corey win an award. That's the other thing. So I want our Darkness Radio listeners, especially here in the Twin Cities area, to come out, buy some ribs, vote while you're enjoying some of those delicious ribs, and vote for Corey, and let's see if we can get him over to the top to win a prize out at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Oak Grove, Minnesota. So there you go. That's the main thing. That's the main thing I'm trying to hit home here this weekend. So if you're hearing this or hearing my voice, and you can come out this weekend, the weekend of the 7th, I believe that's what it is. Let's see. If today is Thursday the 5th, so I guess it'd be Friday. Saturday would be the 7th. Come on out September 7th, Saturday. It's Saturday evening, I believe. After 5 o'clock is when they're going to serve the ribs. So come on out in the evening. Have some delicious ribs. Of course, there's a cost to it. It's not free. So bring your wallet, and you'll buy some tickets for those ribs, of course. And come buy some ribs, try them, and vote for Jelly Bean and Julia in the contest. And let's see if we can't win an award finally, because believe it or not, Corey's not won an award in all the years he's been in this contest over at St. Patrick's Rib Fest. And I can't believe it, because when you try Corey's ribs, not besmirching anybody who's in this contest, but let's just put it this way. J&J's is way above a lot of the contestants that are there. There's some really good contestants that come from miles around. In fact, I think there's one guy who comes from Texas, if I remember right. But J&J's is by far one of the best, if not the best, in this contest. So I want you guys to come out and try it compared to other contestants in this contest. You're going to love them. I guarantee it. I guarantee it. That's for sure. But you got to love a good rib cook-off, right? I mean, you got to. You've got to. And especially since now Corey's got the industrial smoker over there in Coon Rapids. I mean, this is going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to it. So I'm talking food now. Look at me. I'm talking food. I'm excited. Look at me. I'm talking food. So there you go. Saturday, the 7th of September, St. Patrick's Catholic Church over there in Oak Grove. Come join us. Okay, so the other thing, there's going to be some brand new merchandise starting this actually, when you hear my, from the time you hear my voice to this weekend, we've sold out of a lot of the things in the store, and there's a couple of orders that are out there right now that I need to talk to some people about, because we have sold out of some things in the store. There's some new, brand new items coming in that I need to talk to people about and let them know that... I can sub some of those items that we've run out of. For the rest of you, you're going to love some of the items that we've got in. I'll just put it this way. I've got very few of them, but I have a plush Slimer coming in. I've also got a Captain Spaulding's tin sign coming in. Captain Spaulding's fried chicken and gas station sign, I believe it is. I've also got some other great Halloweenish type things that are coming in. In time for the season. So check out the Darkness Radio store. Some great new items coming in. So that's darknessradioshow.com, and check out the store. You'll see what new items will be up. That'll be up before the weekend here. So check that out. All right. With that in mind, again, be a light in someone's darkness this weekend. We're coming up on fall. I know in my yard, tumbleweeds are coming into play. Yes, because we're backed up against the dam. The tumbleweed season is in full effect. So there's plenty of yard work to be done, and you've probably got elderly neighbors or neighbors that are disabled that need your help. Be sure to get out there and see if those neighbors need your help. Also, plenty of stuff to be done. That late summer, early fall cleaning needs to be done. Check with those neighbors that may need your help and see if you can help them out as well. All right. Like I said, plenty of good programming coming up, especially next week. I can't tip my cap, unfortunately, or tip my hand, because if I do, like I said, I've got people trying to poach my guests. So you just have to kind of hang in there and listen next week as to who's coming. I'm telling you, though, it's good stuff. Good stuff. I can't wait. All right. With that, I'm going to curb my enthusiasm, to quote a certain Larry David, and just let you know that I want to thank Jessica Freeberg for the great work this week. And Mally Fox will be back here shortly as well, as kids are getting back into school. I want to thank Beer City Bruiser as well. Three great co-hosts. And we'll all be back next week for the best in true crime and paranormal podcasting. Thank you. Thank you for continuing to listen and spend your hard-earned time listening to the best in true crime and paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10/1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details. Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit Lowe's.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only. Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom. When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com. This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice, and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.